great big glass of wine.
You've tuned in to 96.7 on your FM dial. This is Hugh Cruzell, and the program is QOL, Quality of Life. You know, it is, maybe not going to be broadcast in January, but as you know, sometimes right after the Christmas holidays, the holiday season, whatever you want to call it, there is a period called Dry January. And Christian Kielmeyer will also remind us that there's something called Sober October and a number of other periods of time where you can reassess your relationship with alcohol largely, but his specialty, my interest is wine. Christian Kielmeyer happens to be in Hungary, in Budapest, right, Christian?
That's correct. Hi, welcome everybody. It's a pleasure to be with you, Hugh. Hi.
It's marvelous that we've made this connection, and so sad though that we've never made it in person, but I feel I'm looking at you, we're talking, it's a marvel of modern technology, this thing Zoom.
It is indeed. And again, if you're next time in Budapest, Hungary, or even Vienna, Austria, so close, let me know, reach out to me. Would love to have a good wine, glass of wine with you, or just chat, good coffee, or even visit the region, wine region. So do let me know and reach out to me. I would be glad to show you around.
Well, we'll certainly talk about the wine regions of Hungary for sure. And, on the border in Austria, Burgenland. But let's talk about Dry January, because this is... a very hot topic right now, and many people are offering alcohol-free beverages, even, I hate to use the word de-alcoholized wine, because alcohol is an essential element of wine, isn't it?
Absolutely. You're perfectly right, Hugh. I mean, I just recall a few weeks ago reading that, some of the French people got a little bit upset that the President Macron is not endorsing Dry January more intensely than they wanted to be. And in my opinion, I think it's, fair enough. I can understand that you obviously people had a strong, heavy December, holiday, festivals, food, drinking, and they want to getting into more meditation and having an abstinence as such. But on the other side, I think a more balanced life would be much better. Drink less, drink better wine, in my opinion. And exactly as you mentioned that, alcohol is part of the deal. It's a legalized drug, and it's so important because it's this legalized drug has been part of the human decade, thousands of years now. We are part of the civilization. Hunter and gatherer, coming together, the agricultural, is it beer, is it wine, those fermented beverages. And as you said it, alcohol is part of the element because it's part of the fermentation. And it's just this little miracle which is happening through fermentation and creates from sugar, alcohol, carbon dioxide, and a lot of flavors and aromas. And these are the flavors and aromas which we are after. It's not the alcohol necessarily, that's a byproduct, but it's the aromas and the flavors which we're looking at.
It's true. And there's no doubt that if you go to, and folks, you may not have been to Aquincum yet, but it's just a little bit north of Budapest. It's actually within the city. There, I'm sure there's examples of vine management, beer making. The Romans were there and they were doing things, and I'm sure they were making fermented beverages.
Absolutely. This is part of it. Just think about that. Back in the days, they couldn't really drink water, for instance.
No.
They didn't have plain tap water like we have the luxury of it now, of course. And they had to mix, they had to have some sort of alcoholic beverages. They mixed a lot of herbs, a lot of stuff in there, which obviously by today's standards, we wouldn't call wine necessarily because it's not just grapes. They had honey, they had mead, they had those different herbs, preservatives, of course, to make the water more safer as well. Because back then, that was a huge issue, right? And that's part of the deal. So fermentation has been around for thousands and thousands of years. And the Romans, as they highly appreciated the thermal bath, you maybe been to one of the beautiful spas in Budapest in Hungary. There are many of the thermal spas, and the Romans obviously loved this, and they loved the culture, eating, drinking. That was part of their religion, you could almost say.
Well, I think it's part of the religion of Hungarians right now, because it doesn't take much for you to go very, very close. I think there's even some vines on Rozsadom. They're certainly very close by to Eger or Tian, or further south, or further east even to Mad and Tokaj. There's vineyards everywhere in Hungary.
They are. I mean, I could almost say like the Italians, right? Everywhere is a vineyard. But you said it, you know, Budapest actually has two wine districts. One of them is Egyek Buda, is very famous, Budafok. There are a lot of cellars, Törlei, one of the biggest sparkling producers. One of the local wine schools, a very old wine school is there. And there are some vineyards, of course, with the urbanization. A lot of the development, you know, houses everywhere, the same problem. Vineyards had to be abandoned, or you know, they had to make space for houses, for buildings. And then on the other side, on the, I think it's the 16th district, but there are no vineyards, but it's officially part of the Matra wine region, Matra wine district. There are also some vineyards, and today there are a lot of cellars. And there used to be always, you know, that they were housing wine, finished wine, and actually mushrooms inside. So this was actually a mushroom production and wine storage facility which they had. So yeah, absolutely. You can jump on a tram, as you mentioned Have earlier, you can jump on one of the tram, 49 I think it is, from the center, the Ark Square, and within 30 minutes you're in the vineyards in Budafok actually. You can visit vineyards there, you can visit the wineries there. Sparkling wine making is very big actually in that area. There are a lot of producers. I mentioned Törlei, but there are other ones, Garovari, Szentes is not far away from there as well. So some great, great stuff happening right outside.
And you can head west to Lake Balaton, and there, I mean, vineyards everywhere around the lake, especially on the south-facing slopes of the North Shore. There's whites, reds, rosés. It's Hungary is fascinating.
It is, and as you mentioned earlier, the Romans, I mean, was a law, Lex Domitianus. He actually forbid to have grapes and making wines for the, well, what we call today France and Pannonian area, back then Galicia and Pannonia, because it was too much competition towards the Italian wines. And then, you know, Marcus Aurelius Probus came as a soldier, and he made his soldiers to grow vines, to get rid of the marshes, and, you know, they had to plant vineyards, and they killed him eventually. They didn't like that agriculture job. But, you know, they realized very early, and there are a lot of Roman relics, that Ibera, give me to drink, is one of the old Roman relics with grapes on that. So that there are some really great places to have wine, produce their wine.
So here's all this wine. Here's this Hungarian tradition. But in January, I know it's very much a British thing, this dry January, and then became very much American, and Canadians have embraced it as well. Are Hungarians going, hey, you know what, maybe I partied hardy and I need to tune it down just a little bit?
Nah, I don't think so. Well, if you want to switch you. But obviously, I can't speak for everyone. But my general feeling is that hasn't reached everything. You know, when you go to the east, and Hungary is in Central Europe, Central Eastern, Central Europe, everything comes a bit. So when it reaches Austria, it takes a few more years to reach it, to reach Hungary. But I think, generally speaking, of course, I mean, people do appreciate that they come a little bit, take a little bit back. They will drink and eat less in January, because, you know, the Hungarians love to celebrate. They love the family. They love to come together and love to have that kind of notion of togetherness very much. And wine is part of it. You don't drink a bottle of wine by yourself. You drink it with friends, with other people. I mean, this is one of the things. And of course, during this time, I can see it myself as well, that we open a bottle of Tokaj, and it's going to get finished eventually in 2 weeks or something like that. But I think in January, we drink definitely less. We consume less. I think you spend also more on wine and food. And you're a bit more moderated, of course. But I don't think people are going to necessarily give it up completely.
No.
It's about balance.
I've noticed something, though, that has been happening, is the wine by the glass service has become more available, more accepted, more common. It's not unusual to step off Andrásiút to one of the well-known restaurants. I'm thinking Mensa for one, which I'm sure you know and are familiar with. It's their wine by the glass service is incredible. I mean, yes, you could have three glasses of very nice wine for soup, you know, levesh, is that right? Levish, or you could have it with a salad course, a main course, a dessert. You could have, Frances crema. I'm not saying it properly, but you could have a really good cup of coffee. In Hungary, it's more, it's also easier to drink well, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, you're in a wine country. I mean, we have the luxury that, you know, obviously the wine which has been produced should be always, if you're a wine producing country, the majority should be drunk locally, domestically. I think this is very important. And exactly as you mentioned, wine by the glass is super important. I mean, there are some great inventions from the vacuum pump, from the Coravan. I don't want to advertise anything, but there are some great inventions, you know, where you can keep the wine fresh after you opened it for a longer time of period. And you can have a good program by the glass. And I think this is very important because you might just want to have one wine with one course and then try something else. It's all about selection. Today we have the luxury of so many different wine districts, not just in Hungary but worldwide. So many great wine grapes, as well as method of productions from also low alcohol, no alcohol to natural wines, everything in the middle and between. So that's a great choice today. And I really encourage people to taste, to try, be open-minded. And of course, wine by the glass is super important because in my opinion, it really helps to keep you moderated, right, on one side. But then again, you have a selection and you can try and test stuff out and then buy it later on.
It was probably 20 years ago at another small restaurant, just since I mentioned Andrásút, I think it was called Vörösfehér. It was, I might be getting it, it could be Fekete, black and white, but I don't know if you remember it at all. It was as well known. It also still sells wine, it has a wine shop. But I remember saying, I would like a glass of rosé, if you have some rosé. And the sommelier, who may not have been a sommelier, it may have just been a server, but the knowledge was pretty high. And the eyebrows went up and said, you want rosé? That's wonderful. I'm really quite excited about rosé. I can't get people to drink it. I can't get people to buy it. And now, today, 2023, 2024, instantly, one of the options right after sparkling is, would you like a rosé? And that's a turnaround that I don't think has been embraced here until relatively recently.
I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, rosé is taken seriously in Hungary. I mean, we have Elizabeth Gabi, she comes often to Hungary. She's a big fan. I probably can say that about from Hungarian wines, and she wrote a good, great book on rosé as well. So, you know, she loves to embrace this kind of passion what the Hungarian has in good wines. And you mentioned rosé, and we have another style of wine which is called Schiller, S-I-L-L-E-R. This is technically a red wine, so by law it's actually Schiller is a red wine, but it's like back many years ago, decades ago, in Bordeaux Claret, it's a light red wine actually, so it resembles like a deep rosé kind of in the middle, right? Schiller is a great option as well. You can have it with a beautiful Hungarian fish soup. And there's some great stuff. And Codorca Portuguesa, there are some very light-skinned varieties. Mm-hmm. This resembles a little bit like Pinot Noir. So you don't have much tannins there. You have more fresh acidity and definitely more red fruit and lighter color. So that could be also a rosé-ish style of wine, even if it's red. So yeah, in terms of style, there's a great diversity, and again, having it with food is a great option.
I'm glad to see that also there's been a perhaps vine pulling of Kadarka and a few other varieties that were just almost too robust, and a gentler handling. I don't like to see vines being ripped out of the ground, but I do know some vineyards need to be refreshed and new clones, rootstock being put in place. The other thing that I've noticed as well is if people are not drinking as much, they're drinking better. We've mentioned that. So one of the things is the return of Tokaj and the slighter, sweeter wines of certain regions are now showing up not just as dessert wines, but to go with pâté, to maybe go with a vegetable soup. Are you noticing this as well?
Absolutely. I mean, exactly as you mentioned, that kind of balance, having better wines and less. That's definitely a trend worldwide. People drink less, that's a fact, but they also drink better wines, in my opinion, and at least that what I feel and what I sense. And again, you know, Tokaj is a great example, and in my opinion, to have Tokaj by the glass, coming back to this whole thing again, I know Hungarians have great desserts, and trust me, there's some, you mentioned some of it.
Gesztenyi puree.
Gesztenyi puree, chestnut puree, great stuff, I love it. But you know, you have to be careful, obviously. Dry January should be awesome, but wait, so we conscious about the health in total, not just alcohol, but overall. And I think skip the dessert. I talk against myself, of course. I love sweet stuff, but have a glass of Tokaj by itself, 5-6 Butonyos or a Sommergodny, sweet Sommergodny, just by itself. And this is really a wine of meditation. You just sit down. It has just a great history. There's so much history inside and so much storytelling within the glass of Tokaj or Sommergodny, that is amazing. So you just sit by it with this glass of wine and just chill out, relax, end of the meal. The freshness of the acidity, this kind of volcanic soil, this keeps your mouth fresh, cleansing the layers of the botrytis, again, this beautiful fungus which we have here, additional complexity, layers of never-ending finish, which is happening, and there's so much history, and nature and humans are coming together in this very much wine. So yeah, just have a glass of Tokaj at the very end of the meal, and it's low alcohol, by the way, right? I mean, some of the Ossus are 8-9% alcohol. Essentia, if you have the chance, it's 1%, but it's 500 grams of sugar, but it's fermented. So it is by law, actually, by European law, also wine, that was one of the exclusions which Hungary got when it joined the European Union, that, you know, you're allowed to call Essentia wine as well, because despite being very, 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 very low in alcohol, 1-2% sometimes.
So. Mm. And again, that another big change I found between the late 80s and now is that when you go to Hungary and you say you'd like to try Tokaj, that people are like not shocked by that, that they are welcoming of the concept, and you start to see it in the grocery stores more than you did before. The varieties, Dyznok, for example, I'm probably not saying it correctly, but there's...
No, perfect.
Oh, okay. The five stars. There we go.
This is perfect. This is perfect. It's perfect pronunciation.
Are you seeing, and I didn't, the arrival of wine in cans?
It does happen. I mean, talking about Tokaj, there's one company in Ma, which does a bit of canned stuff as well. They do a bit of fermented, and I don't know what varieties exactly. I don't really drink it. I don't really know much about it. I know it does exist. I mean, obviously, it's a great market for that as well, internationally. I found this in Portugal, you know, from RTD, ready to drink, and those hard seltzer things as well.
Yes, that too.
Yeah, when I was in New York just before COVID, actually, that was the first time when this word hard seltzer popped up, and I had to look it up. That was 2020, I believe, at the New York Wine Expo, and I had to look it up. What is hard seltzer? Never heard this expression before, and obviously, it's a great alternative for ready to drink. You know, think about that. And one thing what the wine industry is a little bit lacking is innovation. And I think the beer people are pretty good in that, you know, when it comes to different beverages, different styles, different packaging and advertisement and all those things. And I think the wine people can learn a lot. I mean, I don't really drink that. I mean, I tried some port tonic, which was ready to make. It's RTD drinks in Portugal, in Porto, from one of the big companies, Taylor's. It was good. I mean, it was fine. I mean, obviously, you're not going to write a tasting note on this, and you're not going to...
It's a beverage.
Have a great... It is a beverage, exactly. And that's how it... That's exactly... you put it right. It's a beverage. And that's something also important.
I'm just thinking that some of these products in cans may also be contributing to a little bit of damp January instead of, you know, because they're 187 milliliters, they're 250, they're 200, they're smaller servings. Again, that might be contributing to people's well-being in the month of January.
Absolutely. And, you know, a bit of spritz, a bit of sparkle, refreshing. And it's, you know, it should be, the important thing is it's made out of grapes. And wine has to be made out of grapes. And we do have a surplus unfortunately, of production. And rather than having ripped out those vines and destroying the agricultural land, the beautiful culture, because let's be honest, if you go to a vineyard, and I don't know any other agriculture crop where people take pictures in it and also have wedding ceremonies there. I mean, I just read recently that the New Zealand former prime minister, she had her wedding in a vineyard.
Marlborough, I think, yes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know when people have in barley, and I respect beer at the utmost, but I don't know when people have in the barley fields weddings or in the apple orchards.
I think so. I think that and corn mazes, but you're right, not soybeans or pump. Well, maybe pumpkins. I don't. You know what? You've prompted me to do some research. But you're right.
There you go.
Vineyards. Vineyards and the hospitality of the vineyards, the winemakers who have tasting rooms. Yes, it's very much a popular place to have a wedding, to have a celebration. And maybe that's where we're going with this as we approach the end, is the end of this program, not the end of the world. But, it is about more than just drinking. Wine is about appreciation, about geography, about so many. It's philosophical as well, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, you mentioned coming together, people, and with all the machinization which happens obviously in the vineyard as well. I was just talking a few days ago to a winemaker that I asked him the question, would you consider machine harvest? He said no, because that's also part of the culture, coming together, that after a hard day of work, picking the grapes, you come together and you celebrate, you drink, you enjoy it, you eat. It's a big family and you come together. And you know, imagine if you do this in a machine, I mean, which is perfectly fine, but you know, the one person goes through the vineyards and there's no celebration. You can't do it with a tractor. So again, it's perfectly right. There's a labor shortage, but it's coming together as a celebration of people embracing, coming together as wine, part of the culture for many, many places. And that's part of our humanity as well, you know, our civilization has been since thousands and thousands of years.
It's been one of the things that cemented, I mean, maybe the United Nations is a wonderful organization, not maybe, it is a wonderful organization, but really grape growing, wine appreciation, wine drinking is perhaps the most united thing of all nations. It tends to bind us together as humans.
Absolutely. I mean, and just a minute, the fermentation, this is a culture when you go to other beverages as well, if it's spirits, is it chocolate, or is it coffee or tea? This is a little miracle which happens there, and it's part of the nature, and it's a beautiful invention which humans could put a little bit further and become a bit more sophisticated for all of that. And I think it comes together, and I think it's what's important as well, that moderation and the balance when it comes to these enjoyments. Because at the end of the day, we should enjoy it, embrace it and enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of poetry written about wine. Certainly, many people, it's not just going out for dinner, the food, but the drink that enhances the food, or sometimes even the wine that's incorporated in the sauces or just even braising beef. A red wine in that beef bourguignon is essential. You know, I'm wondering, though, as we become more and more global, whether we are creating less definition between the countries and the regions. We're becoming more homogeneous. You know, some of the traditional grape varieties like Glera for making Prosecco, unique to that area, has to be protected by governments and rules. Do we worry about particularly Hungarian wine becoming more... more globalized in its, yeah.
Well, you know, if the people start to copy you, that's a good sign. You're original, right? I mean, that's a good thing. I mean, and just we talked about Tokaj quite a bit, and you remember, you know, this in the United States, there's a semi-generic expression for sweet wine. Tokaj, they are allowed to use it. Of course, in the European Union, it's only Tokaj, it's only Hungary and a little part of Slovakia. But it's basically what happens is that once you get copied, then it's a good sign in a way that you're the original, you're the first one, and that's something great. And of course, yeah, I mean, protection is important in a way, but we have to share it with the world, those beautiful things, and make them come to visit those places. So if you're having a good glass of Prosecco, you want to visit Valdobbiadene. It's magnificent. It's the people, the food, the culture, the scenery is beautiful. If you have a Tokaj Osu, you should come to Mad, you should come to Tokaj, to those villages in the northeastern part of Hungary, because it's beautiful. It has a definitive charm, and so on and so on. If you have a great glass of, a German Riesling, go and visit the Mosel. It's a beautiful scenery. It's magnificent. The food is part of it. Wine comes with food. What goes together, right? I mean, this is a saying. And why not? I mean, this is the only, when it comes to food and wine pairing, my only rule. If you enjoy it, it's good. But what goes together as well.
Very good. Christian Kilmar, tell us, because, I mean, I really haven't introduced you as a professional in this industry. What is your actual job, role, employment?
Yeah, so I'm a wine and spirit consultant. I run my own company here in Budapest in Hungary. And one of my main pillars of the company is obviously education. I teach a lot in Austria for the Austrian Wine Academy, local wine schools here in Hungary, Bor Collegium, WCT courses, private courses as well. I try to bring everything a bit together, wine, spirits, different things like sake as well. I'm a big coffee fan, a specialty coffee lover, and kind of a maniac. And the other thing is communication, a consultancy for companies as well, helping to get them on the market, as well as education, communication, and sensory. I'm a big fan of appreciation, and I consult as a sensory expert, not just wine and spirit competition, but also in Hungary for the local government, of course. So it's for me, when it comes to the beverage itself, I see beyond alcohol. So, of course, it's a big part of it, but it's about those little things which make us feel that it's something unique, something special going on in that glass of beverage.
I love it. I love it. And I want to say thank you to you, Christian Kilmar, for your work, because years ago, many Hungarian wineries, marketing groups, thought they knew how to spell words, how to put sentences together in English, and idiomatic expressions, but because of cultural differences, they didn't make sense. So I applaud your efforts and those of your colleagues Rita Takaro. Probably we even know Zoltán Szabó together.
Yes, of course.
Yes. I want to thank Christian Kilmar for being our guest today here on QOL. Christian, are you having a damp January?
No, it's my job, so it's part of the life. I taste a lot, I drink very little, I spit a lot. People are a bit, strange that I'm walking around with a spit tune, but I spit a lot. But you can enjoy wine also with spitting it out, because again, the aromas are concentrating here on the nose, on the ultra and retro nasal, and of course acidity and sourness, bitterness, and sweetness on your tongue, umami. So you don't have to swallow it necessarily. When you swallow it, it goes in your head as well, but it's part of the enjoyment. So I don't drink much over the year as well, but I taste a lot.
Thank you so much for your time today. Köszönöm szépen.
Thank you very much, Hugh. A pleasure to talk with you.
This has been QOL, and I'm your host, Hugh Kruzel. You can listen anytime if you wish on Spotify. Just Google my name, Hugh Kruzel, and the word, the letters, QOL. You might be listening to CKLU 96.7 on your FM dial, or just use Radio Garden to locate this station, CKLU 96.7.